Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. We open our show today with a very important announcement from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. The BLM has banned recreational shooting on all BLM lands in San Diego's East County and the South Coast areas as well for the remainder of fire season. Clayton Howe, the battalion chief with the BLM, wrote in an email that he sent to County Fire Authority Acting Chief Greg Griswold on May 23rd that said, "Collectively, our staffs have discussed our emerging potentially very dangerous fire season given the prolonged drought. We have also sought to reduce the threat of wildfires related to recreational shooting on BLM-administered public lands located within your units." Cal Chief Fire John Francois, in an email sent to fire officials and community leaders across our region, stated that fire agencies now have the authority to enforce the restriction on shooting. "If you see anyone shooting, please contact your local law enforcement agency," Chief Francois urged the public. Robin Brailsford is a Hamul resident who has pushed for a ban on shooting after six fires in the Hamul area were linked to shooting on BLM lands, and she called this announcement good news.
"This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The gubernatorial primary election is Tuesday, June 3rd, and the registrar of voters still needs 150 poll workers throughout the county. Bilingual poll workers are in special demand, but it is not necessary to speak a language other than English to become a poll worker. The registrar also needs standby poll workers who can be assigned on short notice. Poll workers receive a stipend ranging from $75 to $175, depending on the assignment, and those who are bilingual receive an additional $15 if they are assigned specifically to provide language assistance to voters. Poll workers must be registered voters in the state of California or be permanent residents in the United States and have transportation to their assigned polling location. They will also need access to the internet to complete an online training and attend a two-hour class. The registrar's office is required by federal law to provide bilingual speakers and voting materials to voters who can speak Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, and Chinese. A recent survey by the University of California, Berkeley shows a need for speakers of Khmer, Japanese, Korean, and Hindi at about 20 precincts. So the registrar's office is also recruiting poll workers bilingual in those languages for the June 3rd election. If you are bilingual in any of these eight specific languages, the registrar's especially needs your help in Tuesday's election. Prospective poll workers can apply online at www.sdvote.com. For more information, call 858-565-5800.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my special guest is Howard Katz. And Howard is a write-in candidate running as a Democrat in the 71st Assembly race. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now, I understand that it came down to the filing deadline day, and nobody had filed to run as a Democrat. There are two Republicans running in the race, the incumbent, Assemblyman Brian Jones, another Republican, Tony Tiora. And so, basically, as the chairman of the Riverside County Democratic Party, you're it. Is that basically what happened?
Yes, that's what happened. There wasn't a Democrat running, and I decided, along with a few other folks, that it would be good to at least have Democratic representation. Since the main filing had lapsed and I couldn't file as a candidate that would be published on the ballot, I decided to do the write-in. Now, it makes it much more difficult to be a write-in candidate because you're not on the ballot. People have to remember your name and write it in. But
sure,
at least there will be a Democrat available to vote for.
And you've secured the signatures, even to be a write-in, I understand. Now you have to actually get a certain number of signatures so that that can legally count. But you, just to be clear, you've gone through that process.
Yes, I've gone through the process, and it was actually interesting because the area within Riverside County that is the 71st Assembly District is quite large, not in comparison to how big it is in San Diego County.
My listeners are probably mostly in San Diego County here. I'd like to explain to them where the 71st Assembly District is geographically. It's one of the most spread out, maybe the most large district in the state. It extends south to the Mexican border, north beyond the Riverside County line to pick up portions of Temecula and whatever up there.
Well, it's in the unincorporated portion of Temecula, mm-hmm. and it starts there at Meadows Parkway in this area of Temecula, goes all the way east past Cathedral City and Palm Springs, and north all the way to Hemet.
Huge.
So there's quite a large area, but for that large area, there's only 15,000 registered voters.
A lot more here in San Diego, where the district, besides going south to the Mexican border, it goes east all the way to the Imperial County line and then west into portions of San Diego. So it actually encompasses virtually all of East County for my East County listeners here. So, Howard, I'd like you to start by introducing yourself. What are your qualifications for the job, so to speak, your work experience?
Well, I spent a great deal of time, 30-some years, with IBM. After that, I did 10 years of international consulting. Then I was a substitute at high school and taught high school for 6-7 years. I have been very active politically. I ran in the 49th Congressional District against Darrell Issa several years ago
for Congress.
Lost that race to him. And being active in the Riverside County Democratic Party, I finally became elected to its chairmanship.
Now, you have told me that as a teacher or retired teacher, that education is an issue that's near and dear to your heart. Howard, tell us what some of your concerns are about what you're seeing in the California educational system today.
Many years ago, when I went to college, my folks were rather poor. They couldn't afford a great college education for me, so I went to a state school and graduated from what was at the time called San Fernando Valley State College, which is now California State University, Northridge. It cost me $49 a semester plus books, which was $75 to $100.
Wow.
So at $300 a year, I was able to complete my education, go to school for 5 years, and get my degree. Today, if I were to try to duplicate that education, it would be many times that. And I fear that since we've seen a stagnation in wages and earning power of folks, that that kind of education is difficult or impossible for those at the lower income levels to be able to afford. And scholarships are not really the answer, because you can only give so many scholarships. In order to get a broad coverage of people, of students, you need to lower the tuition rates and the cost of books so that it can be affordable across the board.
There you go. Okay. What are some of the other issues that you believe are most important in this campaign where you would differ from the views of the incumbent, Brian Jones?
Well, global warming, I think I probably differ from him because I believe it is man-made. I believe we are changing the environment through carbon dioxide emissions. I'm also very much in favor of Medi-Cal, the Affordable Care Act, Social Security, all the benefits that we can provide not only older aged folks like myself, but also younger people that require medical attention they can't afford.
Yeah, it's important for listeners to understand that with the Affordable Care Act, which is federal, California has enacted Covered California, these health exchanges, to bring health care to many, many people who never had it before. There are some states that are Republican-controlled that have actually opted to not take the federal funding, to not set up these exchanges. So the benefits that people have in California, in many of these other states, do not have access to that.
Along with the ACE, the Affordable Care Act, was the additional money for Medicaid. And many states opted out of that. And by opting out of and not accepting that additional Medicaid funds, which in California is called Medi-Cal, they disenfranchise millions of people from getting health care. And health care is something that should be a right for everybody.
Yeah, I've heard you say that you actually would favor health care for all. In other words, something that goes even beyond what the federal health care reforms we've seen thus far are. Is that something where if you were elected, you would be committed to try to bring a health care program for all to California voters?
Yes, I would. There is one other state in the United States that has enacted that.
Vermont, actually, when Howard Dean was the governor.
That is correct. And I'm definitely in favor of that.
That's interesting, too. Listeners, some of you may not be aware that just a couple of years ago, a health care for all bill was introduced into the legislature in Sacramento. It passed one house of the legislature, and it failed in the other house by two votes. Just two votes. So if health care is your issue, if you're someone out there listening without health insurance, that is certainly something to keep in mind.
Well, what happens when you insure people through a Medi-Cal for or Medicare for all type process is that you lower health care costs because Medicare is the most efficient government program for distribution of health care that there is. Their overhead costs are 2 to 3%. The overhead costs for a privately funded health care system, if we look at the insurance companies that are handling most of the insurance today, is 20 to 30%. So there's a 20, 25% cost reduction in medical expenses just by turning it over to Medicare.
There you go.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, and we're speaking with Howard Katz, a write-in candidate in the 71st Assembly District.
Now, we have talked here about your ideas for rolling back, reducing tuition at the universities, and for extending health care to all Californians. So the question I would have for that is, if you wanted to have those benefits, things that may have some cost attached, what would be your plan to pay for that? In other words, would you do that through raising some kind of taxes or fees, or would you do that by reducing some expenditures somewhere else in the budget?
Many people don't like the idea of increasing taxes. We are at a point in time in our country where our taxes are some of the lowest that they've ever been. If we look at from the Eisenhower era through the Carter era and into the Reagan era, taxes were higher than they are today by a considerable amount. When you reduce taxes, you reduce government income. When you reduce government income, government can't afford to do the kinds of things that it really needs to do. Infrastructure, road repair, bridge repair. It can't afford to pay for schools. It can't afford many things that we, the population, rely on and require. So therefore, you either have to cut programs so you don't spend as much. Mm-hmm. And if you cut programs, all the population suffers, not just the poor, but everyone suffers. Businesses suffer too because businesses have to transport their goods to market, and in order to transport their goods, they need bridges and they need roads. And if you're not repairing bridges and roads, such as we've saw in Northern California a couple of years back when bridges were collapsing mm-hmm. on the freeways, then we can't have an economy. So therefore, perhaps maybe taxes have to go up so that we can afford the kinds of things that make our life here possible. If you take a look at the third world countries where the majority of people do not pay taxes, run away from taxes, and I lived in South America for 7 years, I saw how people live making lots of money and paying no taxes and how crumbling their infrastructure was and how the poor were very disadvantaged. Here we have such a wonderful life, but that life needs to be supported.
Howard, can you give us an example or two of what type of taxes you might support raising in order to fund the programs that we've discussed here?
In California, we've had caps on all kinds of taxes over the years. We've had a cap on home taxes, property taxes, with Proposition 13, and because there's been a cap on that, cities in the state have put in all kinds of fees that are collected with the taxes from the counties. But the major tax that would benefit the whole state would be the income tax. Now, California income tax is not something that exists in a vacuum. It is pegged basically to the federal income tax. And as federal income tax has gone down, California's income tax rates have gone down along with it. California legislature could, with the signature of the governor, raise the rates to a level that would bring in more money, make more money available.
What about something like a wellhead tax on oil? California is the only oil-producing state in the nation that has no wellhead tax on oil. Even Sarah Palin's Alaska has a pretty hefty one.
Yes, and that's criminal, because what we are doing is, as a state population, the population is subsidizing the oil companies by letting them have our resources free. Everyone else taxes them a little bit, and a little bit would go a long way here in California. If we take a look at a state like Texas, which has no individual income tax, no corporate income tax, and what they get is a wellhead fee and taxes on the oil company.
Yeah, that's a very conservative state, and yet they seem to have no problem taxing the oil companies.
That's right.
Interesting. On another environmental issue, we are in the midst of the worst drought in 100 years here throughout California. Here in East County, there's a number of people with wells that are running dry, which is happening statewide also. The other problem that's specific to our region is that we are seeing a number of large energy projects, such as SDG&E's substation out in East County, where they consistently underestimated how much groundwater it used. They said 30 million gallons, it used over 90 million gallons. They're looking at some other energy projects in East County, where a hydrologist at San Diego State has said, if built, this could forever deplete the aquifer, that it would not be able to replenish, and this is what people rely on out there for drinking water, as well as an important source of water for wildlife and vegetation. Do you believe that there need to be any kind of limits on drawing down of groundwater, Howard?
Well, you said two very important words, drawing down and replenish. If the aggregate usage of water, which is the drawing down of water from an aquifer, from all sources, whether it be industry or private residents or cities, whatever user of the water there is, if they draw more than that aquifer is able to replenish, there will be less and less water. As there's less and less water in the aquifer, the water table goes down further and further, and pretty soon there won't be enough to supply. And what will happen is, when the aquifer is lowered, the land over that starts sinking, and sinkholes develop. All kinds of problems are in evidence when a water table goes down.
How do we stop it? Because here we're seeing the county has approved some of these controversial projects, sort of ignoring a lot of the evidence about how much water they would use and what the consequences could be. Is this something where the state legislature needs to take some action to protect residents in these areas?
Hydrologists know, whether they be at universities or privately, where the levels of all the aquifers are in this state that are being used for industry, for farming, and for private use. They know the levels, and they should be able to tell that if an aquifer starts going down, they have to limit the aggregate usage out of that aquifer so that we will have water for not only ourselves, but for future generations. So we need to limit the use of water so that our aquifers are going to be stabilized and that there is going to be enough water for not only ourselves, but future generations.
San Diego County is increasingly becoming a hub for immigrants from around the world, not only from Mexico and South America, which we've long had, but we're actually the number one region for refugee resettlement now in the United States, for places like the Middle East and Africa. It's become an increasingly diverse population with people from all different religions. We have, of course, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, you name it, different races, different ethnicities.
Your opponent, Brian Jones, has endorsed for governor Mr. Donnelly, who is the founder of the California Minutemen and who has drawn criticism for racial remarks, his views not only toward Mexican people, for example, also Muslim people. He accused a Hindu opponent of seeking to impose Sharia law, and in fact, the opponent is not Muslim but Hindu. And Muslim right groups have spoken out and denounced those statements as racist. What are your views on diversity issues, and how near and dear to your heart is that, Howard?
Diversity is very near and dear to my heart. Diversity makes us stronger. This country was founded on the accumulation of different views from different types of people. We assimilated people from all over the world, from the Middle East, from Africa, from Eastern Europe, from Russia, from Western Europe, and every one of them brought something to this country that made it stronger. If we try and consider that limiting it to a certain race or a certain religion or a certain type of person, we are going to cut off our ability to grow. So I am in favor 100% of diversity.
I would also like to talk to you a little bit about the economy and jobs. Here in East County, we have some very, very high pockets of poverty. El Cajon, for example, has almost a 30% poverty rate, very, very high unemployment rates in some areas too. What would your plan be for improving the economy, jobs, wages, any of those areas to help those folks that are struggling, Howard?
Two areas that I think are hot buttons of mine. One is infrastructure repair. In order to get infrastructure repair and the growth of infrastructure, you probably need a tax increase to do that. Our roads and bridges, if we look at the American Society of Civil Engineers, the roads and bridges have been given a D rating by them because lots of them are in need of emergency repair. So we need to invest money in our infrastructure. Secondarily, we need to invest money in our schools. And there has been considerable talk now about minimum wage. Minimum wage has stagnated for years. You need a strong middle class to have a vibrant economy. Without a strong middle class, you don't have a vibrant economy. 70% of the economy is by the middle class spending money to purchase goods. If the middle class can't afford to purchase goods, your economy is not going to be strong. Your stock market may go up, but that doesn't mean that your economy is good. Our stock market has gone up, but our economy is not good. Having the minimum wage go up allows people the flexibility to spend more money to be able to afford more things. If they spend more money, our economy grows. People are able to purchase things. If you take a look at the cost of an automobile today, people that are earning minimum wage can't afford to purchase a new automobile. If we look back 100 years, Henry Ford, who was a staunch Republican, decided that he was going to raise his daily wage to $5 a day so that his employees could purchase his cars. Well, we need to do a similar thing. We need to increase our minimum wage so our employees can afford to live a good middle-class life.
Very good. And I'd like to ask, is there anything else that you would like our listeners specifically to know about yourself or your candidacy, or for that matter, why you believe that it is important to have a Democrat in this race, why you've taken the extraordinary step, we're speaking with Howard Katz, for those that turned in late, K-A-T-Z, to become a write-in candidate for the Democratic Party in the 71st Assembly District.
We need a choice as a Democratic country. We need a choice as a Democratic state. If we only have one party represented on the ballot, we don't have a choice. We don't have a difference of opinion. We don't have the ability to make a selection based upon a full knowledge of what's happening around us and what's available to us. So as a Democrat who holds completely different views from the incumbent on most things, I thought it was extremely important to get on the ballot to give people that choice. And I think that if they look at what I stand for and what I believe in, it will be 180 degrees opposite from the incumbent.
We've been speaking with Howard Katz, K-A-T-Z, who is the Democratic write-in candidate in the 71st Assembly District running against Brian Jones and another Republican, Tony Tiora. Howard, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Where can people get more information about your candidacy or get in touch with you if they have questions?
They can contact me through email. My email address is hkatz@iinet.com.
Very good. And we will have an article up also on our website, so you'll be able to read more at eastcountymagazine.org. Howard, thank you again for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Janice Russell, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Trevor Hill, guest hosting the People Power segment for East County Magazine. Sophia Pruden, a 13-year-old Rolando resident, hosted the 7th annual Cookies for a Cure fundraiser last Sunday, May 25th, in loving memory of her aunt, Amy Pruden, who passed due to leukemia in 2007. When Sophia started Cookies for a Cure in 2008, it was nothing but a lemonade stand. Granted, it did rake in a staggering $800 for charity, which is an impressive feat for a lemonade stand run by an 8-year-old. But since then, Cookies for a Cure has grown into an annual community event that increases in profitability by roughly $1,000 each year. In total, the Prudens have raked in around $20,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and that number will certainly continue to grow. Sophia's entire family contributes to the success of Cookies for a Cure. Her grandfather, Ronald Pruden, a retired commercial baker, works with Sophia to bake the cookies and squeeze the lemons. Her mother, Laura Dickens, works with the city to obtain permits and barricades for the event, which now requires an entire street to be shut down in order to make room for it. Her father, Matt Pruden, orchestrates the setup and takedown. Even Sophia's cousin, who now lives in Iowa, promotes the event over social media. "For our family, it has been a healing thing," said Irene Pruden, Sophia's grandmother. "Something bad happened to our family, but wow, the support we've gotten from people, some we don't even know, it is a gift we can't measure." Sophia loves her work and plans to continue it. "I love helping people and I love Cookies for a Cure," she said. "It makes me feel good to do something to remember my Aunt Amy and also to help other people who are facing the same thing." This year, the event included a bounce house, face painting, live music, a barbecue, a silent auction, and a fire truck from the local fire station. Although this year's Cookies for a Cure event has passed, it is still possible to help. For more information or to donate to Cookies for a Cure, visit the People Power section of eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County features the Santee Street Fair, Julian Gold Rush Days, and some Memorial Day activities. Oh, and a dog race. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival happens this year on Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st for two action-packed days designed for the whole family. Celebrating its sixth year, the Street Fair will host its first annual beer festival featuring five local breweries, Twisted Manzanita Ales and Spirits, B&S Brewing and Distilling Company, Butcher's Brewing, Pacific Islander Brewing Company, and OG's Pizza and Brewing Company. There will also be more than 300 various food and vendor booths, continuous live entertainment on two stages, a family-friendly fun zone with games and attractions, and more than a dozen carnival rides. Admission to the event is free, and parking will be available adjacent to the event. Also, this year's festival highlights a flag-raising kickoff and national anthem honoring our heroes. The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival takes place on Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway in Santee. On Saturday, May 31st, beginning at 9 a.m., downtown La Mesa Village will dress up in red, white, and blue to celebrate a salute to Old Glory at the La Mesa Flag Day Parade. The festivities kick off at 9 a.m. with pre-parade concerts by La Mesa Middle and Parkway Middle Schools. At 10 a.m., the parade, led by the United States 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing Band, marches through downtown La Mesa Village. Guests can look forward to this year's celebration of the Ford Mustang's 50th anniversary. Spectators are encouraged to dress in patriotic colors. Step back in time for Julian Gold Rush Days, an event dedicated to preserving some of the town's history when Civil War veterans headed west in hopes of finding fortune. Activities are open to the public and scheduled for Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Mining Company located on Highway 78. Historical encampments offer visitors a chance to meet miners, mountain men, and cowboys, and to experience gunfighting, reenactments, mock claim jumping, tomahawk throwing demonstrations, gold panning, and more. The old-fashioned mining camp will offer free admission, vendors and arts and crafts market, food and drink, gem mining, children's pioneer games, free parking, and plenty of family fun, including a petting zoo. There will be daily performances by the popular Julian Doves and Desperados. Elsewhere in the town of Julian, for Julian Gold Rush Days, the folks at the Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum, one of the more prosperous mines during the Gold Rush, is open daily for tours. The tours give you the experience of what it was like in the early days of gold mining. And Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum offers daily tours of the mines from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. A Loritix Dog Fun Run will be held on Saturday, May 31st at 9 a.m. at Wood Glen Vista Park in Santee. Lure coursing is a fun chase sport that's recognized by the American Kennel Club for both fun and titles. All dogs know how to do it without any training whatsoever, and all dogs are welcome to participate, including every single breed. At the California Wolf Center on Saturday, March 29th, there will be a presentation on the wolves' natural history, including their important role in the ecosystem, wolf mythology, current conservation issues and efforts, and the future of wolves right here in California. The California Wolf Center is located near Julian and houses several wolves. People of Earth will be performing at 7 p.m. for a free show at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, May 31st from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Besides entertainment, there will be wine by the glass, cheese and crackers, and dessert available for sale. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis. The Julian Fiddle and Picking Contest is back again this year on Saturday, May 31st at the Julian Town Hall. This fiddle and guitar picking contest is open to all ages and engages all those participating and listening in the festive and competitive atmosphere of the traditional old-time fiddle contest. 2014 is the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. To commemorate that event, the History Alive series in Lemon Grove has invited J. Elke Ertl on May 28th to speak and sign her book, Walled In, A West Berlin Girl's Journey to Freedom, and take questions from the audience. The author event takes place at Lemon Grove Library at 6:30 p.m. The presentation is free and suitable for ages 14 and over. ACES, the El Cajon Animal Center for Education and Services Foundation, is holding an animal house auction called Barkitecture 2014 on June 1st at O's American Kitchen, Parkway Plaza, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Custom-built animal houses have been donated to assist ACES fundraising efforts and will be auctioned off for the benefit of the El Cajon Animal Shelter. Included in the ticket price are food and drink, DJ Jumpin' Jack Flash, and the houses will also be judged. One of the judges is Co. Lewis from KGB Radio. The East County Produce Exchange will be holding their next event on Saturday, May 31st, from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the Hamul Hardware parking lot in Hamul. No money is exchanged, and produce from yards and gardens is traded and given out, along with many other handmade items. Here is a preview of a few happenings for next week in East County. The Nile Sisters Development Initiative invites the public to celebrate diverse cultures in the City Heights community on Saturday, June 7th, to commemorate World Refugee Month. The event features a variety of ethnic foods, dancing, spoken word, a DJ, raffles, entertainment for children, and more. Festivities take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Colina del Sol Recreation Center on Orange Avenue in City Heights. The James Hubbell's annual Father's Day open house includes the grand opening of the new Ilan Lael Foundation building, the first brand new building on Hubbell Hill in 10 years. Iconic San Diego artist, global humanitarian, and cultural leader, James Hubbell will once again invite the public to tour his family's magical and historically designated compound in Julian for the annual Father's Day open house on Sunday, June 15th. The archive and gallery spaces of the new building will be open for the first-time event, which will showcase some of Hubbell's most recent work. The Father's Day tour will be open to the public, with tours from 11 a.m. until 1:30 p.m., or 1:30 p.m. until 4 p.m. The ticket price includes shuttle service from Rhinola Farms Marketplace to Hubbell Hill. An Alpine History Day event on June 7th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Alpine features a comic western skit, A Buggy Restoration in Progress, two pioneer houses open for touring, antique vehicles, and food. As part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase series of the San Diego County Library, Bill Hartwell will be performing at the Julian Library on Tuesday, June 3rd, from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Also on Tuesday, June 3rd, at the Rancho San Diego Library, Prairie Sky performs from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. A live local music concert by Levi Dean will be performed on Friday, June 6th at 7 p.m. at Kaffeemeister in Santee. With rich vocals, introspective writing, and accomplished musicianship, Levi Dean creates a progressive style that draws heavily on folk, roots, and bluegrass to make a distinct sound that is rooted in tradition, yet contemporary. That's all for this week. Destination East County is brought to you by our listeners and by a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
This is Stevon Marshall with a health report. The San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency recently announced that the number of pertussis cases, also referred to as whooping cough, reported in the San Diego County and throughout California has surged over the past few years. Another 101 new cases of pertussis were confirmed by local health officials, bringing the total number so far this year to 454. That's more cases than all of last year, when 431 cases were reported. At this point last year, just 63 cases had been reported in January through May. This isn't the highest year ever, though. Back in 2010, there were 1,179 cases of whooping cough locally. Recent cases have been occurring in schools and churches in El Cajon and Centene. The victims range between ages 9 to 15. Symptoms of whooping cough start with a cough or running nose for 1 or 2 weeks, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent the spread of disease to others. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, recommends going to local pharmacies that offer vaccinations or visit your health care provider. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, call the HHSA Immunization Branch at 866-358-2966 or visit www.sdiz.org.
If you're angling for a fish dinner or just enjoy catch-and-release fishing, you can drop a line into Santee Lakes where night fishing kicks off on June 12th. There are a total of 5 night fishing dates coming up, June 12th and 26th, July 20th and 24th, and August 7th from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Bring a lantern, no fishing license is required, and no radios are allowed to disturb the silence of the evening or the fish. The lakes have been stocked with 8,000 pounds of catfish so far this season, with more coming on June 6th. Raymond Paul caught the largest so far, a whopping 4-pounder, in Lake 4 using hot dogs and mealworms as bait. The bass are biting in all lakes. According to the Santee Lakes Fishing Report, though Lakes 1 and 5 have been the hot spots. You can also catch bluegill by fishing around the cattails or off the docks. Santee Lakes has 5 docks plus 4 fishable islands, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. You can get more information or sign up for free fishing reports, including tasty fish recipes, at www.santeelakes.com. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Honoring those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Hundreds turned out for the annual ceremony to honor those in law enforcement who've died in the line of duty. This year, the memorial is back at the County Administration Center. It had temporarily moved while the new waterfront park was being built. The event is a way of making sure these men and women are never forgotten.
When a peace officer gives their life, we all come together as one family, and that's what this ceremony is all about. We honor all the peace officers that, given their life, made the ultimate sacrifice. It's a wonderful profession. I think the noblest profession probably in the world, but it's a profession that sometimes calls for that ultimate sacrifice. And the least we can do is come out here and honor them, respect their families, and come together to reflect on the sacrifice they've made.
Dozens of names are etched in the glass dating as far back as 1864. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I am delighted to be here with three of our wonderful interns from High Tech High. I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about why they decided to intern with East County Magazine.
My name is Trevor, and I decided to intern with East County Magazine because I'm really interested in politics and economics, and I love to write, and I want to get my voice out there and write about things I care about.
Hi, this is Devon, and I became involved with East County Magazine simply because I enjoy writing, and I am currently fascinated with journalism and hope to make a career of it.
Hi, my name is Jaden. I took this internship because I was actually interested in politics and photography and getting out there and getting some news.
Very good. Now, these are rather unusual internships. Jaden, can you explain about how the High Tech High internships work and how they've
differ a little bit from what you might typically see at some other schools.
Our school, High Tech High, gives us the opportunity at the end of the second semester of junior year in order to find ourselves an internship in order to get work experience before we go on to our senior year and eventually college, and where we'll be getting our own jobs. So this gives us a chance to see how, you know, the work hours are, the workload, or and even see if we're interested in the certain things we internship for.
Right, and they're actually full-time, four-week internships. It's not a part-time thing. It's immersion program, so you really learn a lot. So I would like each of you to share with our listeners a highlight or two of your experience so far. And by the way, we're about 1 week into the four-week internship at this point.
Well, I really enjoyed sitting in on the interview and even getting one of my questions asked to Terry Wyatt, a candidate for DA. And I also really enjoyed getting to talk on the radio. I like transferring things from real articles to scripts that are readable for radio, and I enjoyed that.
Very good.
As for me, I also enjoyed sitting in on the interviews with the firefighters. That was my favorite interview so far.
Yeah, we talked to the head of the County Fire Authority, the acting chief of the County Fire Authority.
And also broadcasting and creating scripts out of articles that we find online.
Very good.
Probably my highlight would be the just researching. In my specific case, I'm looking over the DA race, and I've found up some interesting things, good and bad about all the candidates. So I also loved hearing the interview. It was nice to see how people are interviewed and, their answers.
For the rest of you, could you tell us a couple of the other projects that you're working on? Steven, you're working on an interesting political race as well.
I'm currently working on multiple projects. I'm working on covering the insurance commissioner race with Dave Jones. I'm also writing a food-type review of Mystic Cafe. And June 7th, I'm going to be covering the World Refugee Day Festival.
Very exciting. And Trevor, what are you working on?
I'm taking a look at the race for the 53rd Congressional District and Susan Davis and the people running against her. She's the incumbent. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing research on that. I'm going to write up a paper on that. And tonight, I'm going and looking at an author from West Berlin who grew up in West Berlin during the time that the Berlin Wall was up, and she got a look at all the drama that went on there. So I'll be listening to her speak and doing a write-up on the event and hopefully getting to learn more about the Berlin Wall.
Now, each of our interns that works with us on the program has a choice of skills that they can learn. We try to expose them to as many of these as we can. So each one of them gets a chance to research and write news articles for our website. They can write broadcast scripts for radio. They could actually get broadcasting experience reading those scripts that they wrote. They learn newsletter layout skills, how to post articles on our website, sound editing, photography, interview skills, and more. We also, besides the hard news stories, they get a chance to learn some feature writing as well and work with some of the other members of our staff. So tell us a little bit about some of the fun features we have coming up. Jaden, why don't you tell us about the field trip we all have planned coming up on Friday?
This Friday, we're going to go up to Julian and hopefully get some interviews on people from the town and the historic Gold Rush town, and try to see some of the historic moments and stuff that have happened, and also go into the museum and just talk with the people, probably go see Yappa Pies and,
the best, the highlight of Julian for everyone. Along with trying your hand at panning a little gold,
right.
Maybe taking a trip. A trip into the gold mine. There you go. Learn what it was like to be a miner back in the 1800s here. Mm-hmm.
So, following up that, this weekend they're having a Gold Rush Day. So, it's going to be a fun festival that's going on, and everyone gets to try out those things we just mentioned, panning for gold and going in the mine.
Right.
So, that's going to be fun if anybody goes.
Yeah. And then next Tuesday is a big day, Election Day, and so you're going to get a wonderful experience going down to Golden Hall and learning what it's like to cover election night from Election Central.
Looking forward to seeing how the Democrats and Republicans, treat their situations and who wins, who loses.
Yeah, we usually go to each of the political parties. We'll send a team to the wherever the Democrats and the Republicans are hanging out, celebrating or mourning, as the case may be, depending on the outcomes for them.
We also have had some of our other staff come in and work with you guys. So tell us a little bit about the presentation that Tom and Nadine Abbott, our wildfire and breaking news reporters, gave you.
So on the very first day of internship, Tom and Nadine, they did a slideshow because recently there's been a large outbreak of wildfires, and they presented us a slideshow of what to do when covering a fire. So, like, where to park and protection and make sure that you don't become a part of the news.
Exactly. Right. Very good. They brought in all the gear and the scanners and everything, so it was kind of a show-and-tell experience there. Mm-hmm. We also visited a restaurant. Devin, you're also learning a little about restaurant reviewing. Leon, who does our restaurant reviews, worked with you a little about that. Tips from the East County Eater himself.
So on the second day of internship, we decided to go to Mystic Cafe, which is a Mediterranean restaurant. And Leon, who's one of the contributors to the magazine, he basically told me, because I'm writing the paper about the Mystic Cafe, writing the review. And so when I went in there, I just wanted to taste the food, and that was basically it. But Leon opened my eyes to look at the environment, customer service, the overall presentation of the place, and to open my eyes more.
Yeah, there you go. Reviewing is an art and a skill of its own. And I know that, Trevor, you've mentioned that you would like to try your hand at editorial writing as well. So we're going to give you an opportunity to do that. We'll come up with a topic that you feel is important and give you a chance to do an opinion piece, which is yet another skill.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Very good. What else do you think that our listeners might like to know about interning? Is this something that you would recommend to others? You know, what else do you hope to get out of it in the 3 weeks that we have left?
I would highly recommend it. I've had a great time, and it covers such a broad variety of different things that you could be interested in. I mean, all three of us here right now, we're interested in relatively different things, and we're mm-hmm. all doing the same internship and getting the experience we want out of it. And I'm looking forward to doing my editorial and, you know, opinionated pieces.
Fantastic. And we should note the opinion pieces are for our online magazine, eastcountymagazine.org. On the radio, we're subject to FCC rules for nonprofit public broadcasting, so we don't do the opinion pieces on the radio.
Yeah, this internship, it's great because usually when you go to news organizations, you're either doing, you know, print writing or broadcasting. So this gives a whole experience from both, see what you like the most and what you prefer.
Very good. How about you, Stephen?
Yeah, I would recommend this internship, especially since there's a variety of things that you can do. As Trevor said, we all are interested in relatively different things, but it's basically the same internship.
Mm-hmm. I should mention also that some of our past interns, both high school and college interns, have had opportunities to actually win major journalism awards for some of the writing that they did right here at East County Magazine. We've had others go on and get careers in journalism, get hired on, and, you know, everything from news writing to sports writing or other fields of writing like PR, marketing, or something. So it can really be a great learning opportunity. And as nonprofit media, we love our interns. We try to give them a really high-level experience. We're not one of those places where you're going to come in and be doing the clerical, boring work that nobody else wants to do. You get to jump right in covering really major news stories and political races and all kinds of things. Now, two of you I know voiced an interest in economics as well. Mm-hmm. So tell our listeners what you're planning to do with that.
Well, we're looking at doing a story on the minimum wage increase that's being debated right now in San Diego. And we want to look at communities like Lemon Grove and maybe ask people and the city itself whether or not if San Diego does their increase in the minimum wage, if La Mesa or Lemon Grove or other communities in East County would increase the minimum wage there.
Yeah, I like that idea. It's kind of thinking outside the box and sort of thinking ahead to anticipate what the next news might be, not just reacting to what's already going on. Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us on the East County Magazine show today and for all that you're doing to help us.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Great. One last thing. If anybody out there is interested in becoming an intern, or for that matter, a community volunteer, we do have both. You can contact me at editor@eastcountymagazine.org, or you can call me, Miriam Raftery, at 619-698-8255. 7617.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Opposition is growing to Assembly Bill 2145, a bill that consumer advocates warn is an effort by large utility companies to crush competition. If enacted, AB 2145 would limit consumers' choices and make it difficult for competitors of SDG&E, such as the nonprofit San Diego Energy Foundation, to offer ratepayers an alternative for buying clean, green power. It also infringes on local government's decision-making power and would make it difficult for a city or county, such as San Diego, to create its own district. In effect, the bill increases power for monopolies such as SDG&E. The bill is expected to be heard as early as this week in the legislature. Now, a petition urging the legislature to reject AB 2145 is circulating at www.noon2145.org. So far, 23 cities and counties have come out in support of the petition against AB 2145. So have many elected officials, including San Diego Supervisors Diane Jacob and Dave Roberts. The California Public Utilities Commission's Office of Ratepayer Advocates also opposes the bill, along with the League of California Cities, Friends of San Diego Clean Energy, the California Sierra Club, San Diego Energy Foundation, the California Manufacturers and Technology Association, the World Wildlife Fund, and dozens more. You can sign the petition or read a list of supporters at www.noon2145.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.